Call to order this meeting of the Senate Taxes Committee Wednesday, March 5th at 9:01 a.m. A quorum is present. First item is to adopt the, or consider the minutes from Thursday, February 27th. Are there corrections or additions? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved as presented. We're going to be flexible with the agenda this morning, and we're going to begin with Senate File 6, Senator Rarick. Senate File 1028 is before us. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I believe we have an A2 author's amendment for the bill.
Senator Weber moves the A2 author's amendment. I think it's in your packets. Beg pardon? No, Senator Weber already did. I'm just looking for it. It is in your packets, and it's an author's amendment. Perhaps, however, after it's adopted, Senator Rarick, if you would explain it, it's more than just a date change.
Yep, I'll be able to explain the whole bill with this adoption.
Thank you, thank you, Senator Rarick. All those in favor of the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The bill, as amended in front of you, is looking to address a problem that we have in Minnesota. Over the last couple years, we've given some money out to EMS systems because we know, especially in rural Minnesota, we're having a problem with the keeping them afloat financially. And one of the ways I believe we can address that long term is the example that we have in Cloquet around the fire district. The problem with the fire district, though, is by no longer being affiliated with a city, when the city receives their LGA funding, the fire district is no longer getting any of that aid from the city. So this is looking to create kind of that same model for the fire districts. And we believe by doing so, it will encourage other fire districts to form around the state, which is consolidating a lot of these small departments, making them far more efficient and far more affordable for the areas to manage and operate. So section one of the bill, as amended, is giving us the definitions. Section two of the bill is where subdivision two under section one is where the meat of the bill comes from. And with the amendment, what we're doing, one of the things that was of concern, because this is aid that is going to be based on the levies, with the amendment, what we did is we're going to take a five-year average of the levies, so that one, there was concern that if a district would raise their levy high, it would automatically increase the assistance from the state. So by doing a five-year average, it discourages that because it's only going to be the average anyway. And then the other concern had been by going with a one-year look back, if you levied high, you got a high amount of aid, then the next year you levied low, your aid would be going up and down. There'd be no consistency. So by doing the five-year look, it would make that far more consistent and far more fitting to what the district has been levying locally to get there. And then also a part of it that we adopted with the amendment is a new district that does not have that six-year history, you are going to just go by the 1 year because they do not have the history to look at. Subdivision three of section one outlines the commissioner's responsibilities, that they're to certify the aid amounts before August 1st of the year, and then the aid payment is to be made the following July 20th. And subdivision 4 is the appropriation. And with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. The fire chief from Cloquet Area Fire District, Mr. Jesse Booz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair, Senators. I am Jesse Booz. I'm the fire chief of the Cloquet Area Fire District. And I wanted to thank you, first of all, for allowing me a few minutes today to speak to you about this very important bill establishing fire protection and ambulance special district aid. I would like to thank Senator Rarick for his leadership on Senate File 1028, and Senators Hochschild and Senator Nelson, and also Senator Hoffman for their role as authors and advocates for this bill. Having bipartisan support demonstrates that you all understand that an effort to consolidate fire and ambulance services is the future for many areas in our state. In 2021, the legislature passed a bill that allows multiple fire departments and our municipal ambulance services to combine into a unified special district under Minnesota Statute 144F.01. When the municipal boundaries are no longer a factor and you enact a regional approach to emergency services, you can remove redundant apparatus, equipment, duplicate administrations, processes, and at times even fire stations can be eliminated. Since our four fire departments joined together in 2009 to create the Cloquet Area Fire District, we have eliminated five large firefighting apparatus, multiple smaller vehicles, and one fire station. In that time, we've improved service delivery to our 275 square miles of ambulance service area and approximately 70 square miles of fire and rescue service area. And that area includes cities, rural townships, heavy industry, and the Fond du Lac reservation, as well as the heavily trafficked I-35 corridor through Carlton County. When a special district is created, they're separated from many decades of, or even 100 plus years of financial planning in the accumulation of reserve funds established when they're part of a city or a township. A newly formed district has immediate operational expenses, looming capital expenses, and more costly items such as facility replacements to consider. A major challenge we face as a special district in Minnesota is the limits in our current system regarding funding opportunities. As an example, our district did not receive any of the $300 million in public safety aid recently distributed. Further, we cannot apply for certain state grant funding opportunities, and no system accounts for the impact of non-taxable government-owned lands on a district's tax capacity. We did not receive any of the CARES or ARPA assistance in recent years from the federal government, as another example. And we do apply for any grant opportunities we find. And we did also receive the one-time emergency ambulance aid last year as the holder of an ambulance license in the state of Minnesota. And we do thank the legislators for their work on that. And as Senator Hochschild articulated so well last year in this committee setting, we should encourage the formation of fire and ambulance special districts. We should support their creation and work to remove the roadblocks for communities that are willing to innovate and build a more efficient and sustainable service throughout a larger region. I wanted to share with the senators, Madam Chair, my mother and father were contractors. I come from a long line of carpenters. My grandfather, uncles, and brothers were or are very skilled craftsmen. I was taught to build with integrity and quality and longevity as principles. Even if you're fixing up an old building, you do it well so that it stands the test of time. In construction, as with many other things, there are times when you must brace something or prop it up until you can institute a more permanent repair. It's a good analogy for much of our state's fire, rescue, and ambulance services. We can continue to brace with one-time monies, but until we are willing to innovate and at times tear the system apart and rebuild it, we will not solve our challenges long-term. I've spoken to many community leaders across the state about the formation of special districts over the last few years, and many see it as an opportunity to adapt their region to a more sustainable system of emergency fire and EMS response, and they're watching closely to see what actions our legislators take to support the creation of fire and ambulance special districts. I want to thank you for taking a few minutes to hear me out and for your support on this very important bill.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments for the fire chief or Senator Rarick, Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rarick, thank you for bringing this piece of legislation in. I believe in 2021, when we passed the first special fire district, I think it was very innovative at that time. And I appreciate the fact that we've seen that it's been very, very helpful. And I also appreciate the fact that we're now looking at ambulance, special district services as well. I know that's a problem in my district as well. And some cities have looked at this and realized that, you know, we just don't have a one-size-fits-all. There's a one-size need for EMS. It needs to be there. When you need it, and it's life-saving, and you need it right away. Or with your fire, you need it right away. But there just isn't a one-size-fits-all in how to get that done. And I think this is a very innovative piece of legislation that will help us make sure that every Minnesotan knows that when they call 911, whether it be for fire protection or life-saving EMS services, that there will be an answer and help on the way. So, Senator Rarick, thank you for bringing this continued innovation.
Yeah, okay. What? What? Okay.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rarick. I wonder, looking at the distribution outlined in the bottom of page one of the bill, it appears to incentivize a larger levy from the district rather than a smaller one. I'm just wondering, Senator Rarick, as you think about the bill going forward, maybe an effort to make the aid available in a way that it disincentivizes a growing level from the district rather than incentivizing it. Yeah, and that was just a comment, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Thank you, Senator Drazkowski. Senator Rarick?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And that was part of the reason we went with the five-year average as well to kind of cap some of that, where if you just do the one-year look, you're right, that would maybe encourage a district to really raise their levy one time to get that large state aid. By doing the five-year average, you really wouldn't see that big increase unless they continue to do it, and then they'd be asking a lot from their local folks as well. So that's why we believe this five-year average would limit that. But I'm more than happy to keep talking to folks to see if there's something else that would help with that as well. We were very aware of that and trying to cap some of that.
Anyone else? Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks again, Senator Rarick, for bringing this bill. I'm grateful to be able to join you on it. You know, I think one of the most unfortunate things in government is when we try to put things in place that help folks do the right thing, and then there's externalities that make that more difficult. And that is exactly what has happened here, where Cloquet has sort of led the way, the fire district has led the way on how to sort of regionalize and consolidate these core services that our rural communities need. And being the neighboring senator to this region, I know that I have several places right nearby that are facing almost identical circumstances that have not consolidated, and yet they're receiving some of those aids to those local governments. And I would just say it's kind of the reverse of what I've always talked about, which is for a lot of our EMS districts, the license is held by this local small town that then has to tax their own property owners to then cover free riders or whatever you would want to call it in the surrounding district that they serve. Now, in this case, you've consolidated and you are able to get those regional property taxes, but you're not then getting the incentives from the state to help encourage you to do that. So we're sort of facing a two-pronged challenge here, and I think your bill sort of gets at one of them. I also would be remiss not to bring up that I have an EMS aid bill again this year, similar to what we did last year, looking at trying to create a sustainable model for how we can provide those supports. I'd love to take a look at my bill, at your bill, and see sort of as we move through the legislative process if there's an opportunity for us to create some sustainability in both ways. Appreciate you coming, Chief, and good to see you as always.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. Are there any other comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you. Thank you, Senator Rarick. And I enjoyed sitting in the cafeteria with you waiting for this hearing. Thank you so much for driving down all this way and your supporters. Thank you, Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
On a day like today. Senate file 1028 as amended will be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill. The next bill is Senator Wicklund with Senate file 1857, 1587. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for your patience, Senator Wicklund. Please present Senate file 1587.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate being able to present Senate file 1587. This is a bill that the City of Bloomington is seeking legislative approval to extend the property tax exemption for a prominent redevelopment site in Northeast Bloomington. It's a former Ramada Hotel. The extension is requested to be extended by 6 years, totaling 15 years starting January 1st, 2025. Some may know this vacant 11-acre property as the former location of the Thunderbird Hotel. It is located at the intersection of 494 and Highway 77, just south of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. The property is publicly owned by the city's economic development arm called the Port Authority. The city and Port Authority are seeking additional time, with exempt status to ensure that the redevelopment of this site can bring economic development benefits to the community. And I have a testifier here, Holly Masick, Port Authority Administrator, to provide more details.
Okay, any questions for Senator Wicklund before I call on her witness? And I was just curious myself if the, I know it's a very small revenue impact from the revenue estimate, but is something like this likely to change when the February forecast is released?
Madam Chair, I am not sure. I don't think I have the expertise.
It just occurred to me when I was reading
how much
the
different
bill
yeah.
yesterday.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. And that goes for any of the other bills that we have before us that have a state cost. If they're built on the November forecast, mm-hmm. Is something going to change with the February forecast that we're getting tomorrow, even though this is a property tax exemption issue, but just want to alert people to understand that when we start building the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, the memo from the Department of Revenue does explicitly say the estimate is based on the November 24 forecast. But I'm not sure how they go about, do they go about reviewing these after the February forecast?
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much, Senator Wicklund. Senate file 1587 will be laid over for consideration.
Can I have my testifier? Ms. Masick?
I'm sorry. Yes, of course. I was already assuming your testimony, and I was looking at the handout you had. But welcome. Thank you for reminding me, Senator Wicklund. Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Holly Masick, and I serve as the administrator of the Bloomington Port Authority, which is the economic development arm of the City of Bloomington. The Bloomington Port Authority purchased the property in question, which was most recently the site of a former Ramada Hotel in 2016, to prevent low-density use from being developed on the site and to hold it for a higher and better use. This initiated the 9-year economic development tax exemption on the parcels, which remain publicly owned. This 11-acre site is highly visible and situated just south of MSP Airport and 494. As such, it was identified as an ideal site for the state's World's Fair Expo pursuit and held out of development for several years while the state and federal government pursued the Expo bid. In 2023, that bid was ultimately unsuccessful, and since then, rising interest rates and slowed commercial development have resulted in limited interest from potential buyers. The city is currently reevaluating strategies for the site. The site remains a key development opportunity for Bloomington. It has great potential to attract high-quality investment that will complement the hospitality, high-tech, and residential activity that is occurring in the South Loop neighborhood. City of Bloomington and the Port Authority are seeking extended property tax exemption to allow more time to market the site and determine best options for its future use. We appreciate your consideration of our request, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments? Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know the site. I understand the history of the potential World's Fair. I guess the one thing I'm not, and I understood your comment that the Port Authority purchased it to prevent low density use for a higher use. But what is that? What are you anticipating? Or maybe you're not. I mean, I see you're seeking the extension, but what do you, is it more retail, apartments? What are you looking at? Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair and Senators, thank you. Sorry?
No, I was just calling on you.
Oh, okay. Again, it's Holly Masick from the Bloomington Port Authority. We are interested in a variety of things. It is zoned for high-density development, and so retail may be a part of that. We can also look at high-density housing there or cultural uses as well. It is also just north of Mall of America, and we have been seeing a lot of apartment development in that area, as well as semiconductor and high-tech manufacturing in that area. And so we do anticipate a lot of interest. We have received a number of inquiries. At this point, we just need a little more time so that we can vet them properly and make sure that we have the best possible opportunities for the site.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments for Senator Wicklund or the witness? Thank you very much then, Senator Wicklund. But before you go, Mr. Munn has a comment about the impact of a forecast on the bill, and he is speaking to us online.
Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to respond to your question about whether these revenue estimates would need to be updated when the February forecast is published. It's possible that the February forecast makes a different assumption about the growth of tax levies over the next few years, and which would have a possible effect on the cost. But in past years, it's been unlikely. There hasn't been a dramatic change between the November and February forecasts in that regard. So I wouldn't anticipate this cost changing, and if it did, it would be extremely insignificant.
Thank you, Mr. Munn. That's very reassuring. So with that, Senator Wicklund, Senate File 1587 will be laid over for consideration in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next bill is Senate File 1579. This is a bill from Senator Mohammed, and she is presenting her bill remotely. Senator Mohammed, and we're welcoming Mr. Leonard Findae, Secretary Treasurer of the Leechland Bank of Ojibwe, as your witness. Senator Mohammed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the flexibility. Senate File 1570 seeks to establish a property tax exemption for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Twin Cities office, which is located in my district. The office is a key location to serve approximately 1,600 Leech Lake Band members who reside in the greater metro area, as well as the larger Twin Cities Native community. The property is owned and staffed by the Leech Lake Band and offers a physical location that is much closer than the 200-mile drive to the Leech Lake government's office in Cass Lake. While many of those who are served in the Twin Cities office are my constituents, many also come from the greater metro area to access services ranging from the elder programming to vaccination clinics to child welfare assistance and a host of community gatherings and celebrations. Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Council is here with us today, as you've mentioned, and can share more about all the community services that occur at the Leech Lake Band office and answer questions that you may have. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Sir, welcome. Welcome to, are there questions for Senator Muhammad before I call on Mr. Finding? Seeing none, welcome to the committee, sir. We're pleased to have your testimony if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rest, Senator Muhammad, and members of the committee. My name is Lenny Finde, and I'm pleased to serve as the Secretary-Treasurer of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and I'm thankful for the opportunity today to testify in support of Senate File 1579. This is a bill Senator Muhammad mentioned that would create a property tax exemption for the Leech Lake Twin Cities office. It was a measure that was before this committee last year. It's the same as last year that the committee adopted, but did not get in the final omnibus bill that was approved. The bill would authorize a property tax exemption that would apply to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Twin Cities office building located at 2438 27th Avenue South in the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis. The building is operated by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe government and provides programs and services offered by the tribal government to Leech Lake citizens living in the Twin Cities metro area. The tribal government programs provided at the Leech Lake Twin Cities office include permanent space for our child welfare program, our legal department, tribal assistance program, and elder advocates. The Twin Cities office also offers community members access to faxing, copying, phones, computers, notary public services, and access to our monthly tribal newspaper, the Debajimon. Administrative staff are also on site to update personal contact information on a regular basis. In addition to these programs and services that are available on a daily basis, the Leech Lake Twin Cities office also hosts many community events and provides a location for on-reservation programs to provide services as needed. The Twin Cities office hosts community gatherings, vaccination clinics, expungement clinics, tribal council quarterly meetings, and Toys for Tots drives, just to name a few. When Leech Lake acquired the property in 2019, we had a tenant occupying part of the building under an existing lease. This lease recently expired, and as we explored options for the space being vacated by the tenant, we discovered that the property tax assessments would be a substantial burden for occupying the entire building just with our government programs. Without a tenant to offset a portion of the tax obligation, the cost to the Leech Lake Band to operate the building exclusively for our tribal government programs would increase substantially. Currently, the property taxes represent two-thirds of the anticipated building operating costs for the current year. The result is increased costs of delivering critical and important government services for our urban citizens that is around triple what we would be paying without property taxes. The services offered by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe at the Twin Cities office are the same as those offered by other governments that benefit from exempt property tax status. As the members of this committee know, one of the unavoidable costs of conducting government business is office space and the property needed for that office space. Tripling the cost of office space reduces the quality and quantity of services that governments are able to provide. In order to expand the government services available to Leech Lake Band members throughout our Twin Cities area, it's necessary to limit the cost as much as possible. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is dedicated to maintaining existing programs and services available to our urban band citizens and intends to increase and improve community services. Gaining the ability to qualify for a tax exemption based on operation of these programs and services at our Twin Cities office would enhance the ability to pursue this intent. On behalf of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, I want to thank the committee members for their time and consideration of Senate File 1579 and for the opportunity to testify today. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much for your time and attention. And I do also just want to note that we have worked with the City of Minneapolis on this. They unfortunately are not able to be here today, but they did authorize me to inform the committee that they're supportive of this legislation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Findlay, for that extra information. Are there any comments or questions for Senator Mohammed or for Mr. Findlay? Seeing none, Senate File 1579 will be laid over for consideration in the tax bill.
Thank you.
The next bill under consideration is Senate File 755, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Rest. I appreciate the opportunity, members, to present Senate File number 755, which is basically a duplicate of language that was entered in 2024 of Senate File 5029. I'd like to thank the members that have signed on to this bill, Senator Howe, Senator Lang, Senator Grunhagen, and last year with Senator Putnam. All have members of the family, the constituent that I have with me today, members of his family that live and have property in these senators' districts. So the land has pretty much been owned by the family farm, and it's basically asking that the family farm might be expanded so that some nephews, some relatives might be able to be included in underneath the Family Farm Corporation. And we're asking, right now, state law says 12 is the maximum that's allowed. We'd like to be able to increase that to number 18 and larger if possible. And instead of my talking, I'd rather have my constituent and those who would like to testify. So. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson, we just want to make sure that members see that the only change in the statute is that changing that number from 12 to 18.
That's correct.
No, none of the other policy regarding this is proposed to be amended. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Are there questions for Senator Anderson? There's quite a bit of analysis detail on the revenue estimate. I would suggest people take a look at that if they have any other questions. And with that, we will turn to your testifiers. Mr. Dan Schiffelbein.
Yeah, thank you.
And actually, identify yourself
subtract
the
A for the O, and it's Don.
I'm sorry, what?
It's Don Schiffelbein.
Don,
yes,
not
ma'am.
Dan. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. I do have a brother, Dan, so I could be interchangeable, okay. But Don is the one you have today.
We'll go
here with my wife, Jennifer, as well as sitting behind.
We'll go with Don.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, for the correction.
Yeah, just a little background, Madam Chair, and I appreciate everybody hearing this out, is we have a large family farm here in central Minnesota, just south of St. Cloud, and by large, I mean large family members. So there's eight brothers, our eight wives. We have 32 collective children, their husbands and wives. They have 42 collective grandchildren, their wives and theirs. So for an issue of numbers means something to us, okay? So I'd like to think this is the Catholic provision for this rule. And what we're basically asking is, I don't believe it has a lot of economic merit whether or not you expand it or not, because it's not the economic limit that hurts us, is the fact that we can't transfer land into more than 12 members without having the negative impact of this rule impacting us. So we're trying to do estate planning and getting it into all these various family members, but this prohibits us from doing so because our taxes would rise, and it actually is not a zero, it's a zero-sum game with this rule if you understand it. If you go from 12 to 13, you go from all the tax benefit to zero tax benefit, if you follow me. So it's if you trickle over, it goes to zero. And so we've kept ourselves at 12 but for us, that's barely the brothers, so there's not a whole lot of flexibility for us to do estate planning. So, Madam Chair, that's our dilemma, and we'd appreciate your assistance in helping us through this dilemma.
Thank you very much. We also have Mr. Hunter Peterson on behalf of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau. Just want to echo everything that Mr. Schiefelbein said. You know, he has an impressively large family. And, you know, I would add, there's a lot of farmers out there who struggle to find anyone in their family to come home and join them on the farm or to pass the farm along. And Mr. Schiefelbein and his family are incredibly lucky to have so many family members involved in their farm that they're here to ask for this today. And so, you know, Minnesota Farm Bureau really values having, I mean, anyone in the family continue on with the farm, but especially extended family and getting those people involved and making sure that, you know, that he's not essentially penalized for having so many people in his family who want to be a part of the operation. So thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill. Thank you, Senator Anderson, for bringing it forward. And thank you to Mr. Schiefelbein for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Thank you, Mr. Schiefelbein. And thank you, Senator Anderson. Are there any questions or comments? Oh, yes. I'm sorry, Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to Senator Anderson for bringing the bill and for continuing to work on this important issue, and also to Mr. and Mrs. Schiefelbein for braving the snow and coming down here. And last, Madam Chair, I want to just sort of underscore my support for this bill because although Mr. Schiefelbein already stole my joke, this is an unfair tax on Stearns County.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Are there any other comments? Senator Anderson, any final comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to help my constituent, other family members who are in the family that would like to farm and continue their operation to grow and expand our agriculture economy here in Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senate file 755 will be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Next, we have Senator Drazkowski, Senate File 1269. Senator Drazkowski, if you would take us through the bill section by section.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment. Could I make that first?
Senator Drazkowski offers an oral amendment. Do you want to state your amendment?
On line 2.18, strike general and insert clean water. So the appropriation will come from the Clean Water Fund instead of the general fund?
I'm going to ask counsel to repeat that so we can mark our bills.
Madam Chair, if I could just ask Senator Drazkowski to repeat that for me. I didn't quite follow which fund.
Senator Drazkowski, if you would repeat it, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sylvia, on line 2.18, strike the word general, insert clean water.
What's the word? You're taking out general. What are you adding?
Clean water.
Clean water. Okay.
Very clean, cool water.
Right, got it. Thank you, Senator Drazkowski. Does everyone understand that amendment, Mr. Sylvia?
Yes, Madam Chair. Would you like me to read into the record, or?
I just wanted to verify what we're changing
yes.
to.
Madam Chair, can I have it read into the record, please?
Yes. I mean, it will be part of the minutes.
I just need to find it.
Big pardon?
I just need to find it.
You need to, I'm sorry, Senator Klein, your question?
Madam Chair, I was hoping Mr. Sylvia could say it because I haven't put it on my sheet yet.
Oh, okay. Look on page 2, line 18, Senator Klein. And Senator Drazkowski's amendment is to strike the word general and insert clean water. So it would be annually appropriated from the Clean Water Fund, okay? It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Drazkowski now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, Senate File 1269 is a repeat of a Senate file that we had here about a year ago, last session. What it provides is an automatic tax credit for farms that are enrolled in the water quality certification program that is already run by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I'll just walk through the bill. So instead of them applying for it, the mechanism for them to receive the credit, the training, the certification, and the communication between agencies is all included in the bill. So starting on page one, section one covers the eligibility for the program, which is 2A and 2B properties. You have to, as a farmer, be certified by the Commissioner of Agriculture or one of the Commissioner's helper groups, which include employees of the NRCS, Minnesota Certified Crop Advisor, or someone with ag conservation experience certified by the Commissioner of Agriculture. Together, they would compile the list of certified farmers within the region. And that region would include the eight counties in southeast Minnesota. Those are outlined on 1.14 and 1.15. Following that, you can see the Commissioner of Agriculture annually notifies the assessors in the counties. Subdivision 2 outlines its $5 per acre credit. The credit reimbursement is under Subdivision 3 on the bottom of page 1. The county auditor determines the tax reductions within their county, and they certify to the Commissioner of Revenue. And if you turn to page 2, the commissioner has to review them for accuracy, and if they aren't accurate, they send them back to the auditor for them to work on them again to get them right. They are used to proportionally reduce the net tax capacity, property tax for that particular farm, which would be the house, garage, and an acre. The payment subdivision 4, Commissioner of Revenue, there's kind of two sections of the payment. The Commissioner of Revenue will reimburse all the taxing districts other than school districts on October 31st and 26th. And then the Commissioner of Revenue works with the Commissioner of Education to take care of the school districts in 2.12 through 2.15. The appropriation, which was the part of the bill we just amended, is included on 2.16 through 2.20. The payment to school districts requires a reference in section 2 of the bill. Section 3 adds the water quality credit to the computation section in statute that has to be used to compute property taxes. Section 4 makes certain that it's included in the calculations and information for the truth in taxation notice. In section 5 on page 7, Madam Chair and members, make certain that it's included in the property tax statement. That is the bill. A little bit of background, members, and I did talk through it last year, but 2 years ago, the Environmental Protection Agency raided two farms in southeast Minnesota. Both of them were in my district, one in Olmsted County, one in Winona County. They showed up unannounced on the farms, prompted to do so by a petition from a consortium of environmental organizations that years earlier had sued the EPA for their same contentions that they included in their letter, their petition to the EPA. So that's the background on where we have the question or the added spotlight, if you will, on nitrates in the nitrate situation in the geology of these eight southeastern Minnesota counties that are included in the bill. Since that raid on those farms, the EPA has come back and written a letter to the Department of Health, the MPCA, and the Department of Agriculture saying, State of Minnesota, you aren't doing as much as we want you to do. And then, Madam Chair and members, those agencies reacted to that with a plan, which is there's a summary piece included in your materials that outline the plan that the three agencies have. We've already gone through their short-term plan, and you'll see on the bottom page one of that, the intermediate and long-term pieces of that. So this, and as a term I used last time, members, and I remember Senator Klein saying he had the stick and this is the carrot. And so this is actually a carrot to encourage farmers to endeavor on their own with the incentive that would be included in the bill, of course, to increase the number that are included in the certified water quality program, to act in ways that meet the needs outlined in that plan. So members, that is the bill and the background on it. I would stand for questions, but maybe Mr. Peterson is here also, Madam Chair, if you would like to hear from him first.
Senator Drazkowski, Mr. Sylvia suggests another amendment to accomplish your purpose. Mr. Sylvia?
Madam Chair, Senator Drazkowski and members, so the oral amendment a few minutes ago that was adopted was relating to the payments for school districts on line 2.18. We would also have to make the same corresponding change on 2.19, where the general fund is also referenced. So, Madam Chair and members, I would recommend an oral amendment on line 2.19, delete the word general, insert clean water, so that the phrase would be clear that the money appropriated for school districts is annually appropriated from the clean water fund.
I would move that, Madam Chair, to on 2.19, strike the word general and insert clean water.
Are members clear? Senator Drazkowski moves on page 2, line 19, to strike the word general and insert clean water. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. And the amendment is adopted. Senator Drazkowski or our Senate counsel, Ms. Pollack, or Mr. Munn, would that change the revenue estimate, making that change?
Madam Chair, it would not change the amounts of the revenue estimate, but it would change the funding source to be from the Clean Water Fund. So it would just no longer affect the general fund in the same way.
Thank you, and I'm assuming that everyone can correct the revenue estimate in that regard. I asked council because you were going to the Clean Water Fund if that would occasion a referral to Senator Herr's committee, and without that kind of request from Senator Herr, we are deciding that it does not need to go there.
They requested it. They just did.
Hmm?
They just got a message saying they're requesting it.
Why?
Because it's
human. But we have another committee weighing in, Senator Drazkowski, the Committee on the Environment.
Senator
Which one?
Herr's, Senator Herr's committee.
Oh. I guess Senator Herr does want to see this bill now with this amendment on there. So we had two different opinions, but this is the one from the committee that would otherwise be affected. So when the motion is made, it will be a re-referral to Senator Herr's committee.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Herr is doing well in the snowstorm. He's very responsive today.
Okay.
Good staff.
So, Mr. Peterson, did you want to testify, and then we'll turn to you, Mr. Lurie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record again, Hunter Peterson, Minnesota Farm Bureau. Happy to be here today in support of Senate File 1269. Appreciate Senator Drazkowski bringing it forward. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports tax incentives for farmers enrolled in the Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. Minnesota's Ag Water Quality Certification Program has been a successful voluntary initiative that recognizes and rewards farmers for implementing conservation practices that protect our state's water resources. Since its inception, this program has provided a pathway for farmers to demonstrate their commitment to environmental stewardship while maintaining productive and profitable operations. With ongoing dialogue about water quality in Southeast Minnesota, we understand and appreciate the rationale for targeting this credit towards the Karst region. The proposed credit is a logical next step in encouraging greater participation in the Ag Water Quality Cert program. And while farmers are committed to conservation, the expenses with adopting certain conservation practices are often too big a barrier for farmers to overcome on their own. So to that end, this credit would help farmers who wish to further adopt conservation practices or become certified under this program to achieve those goals. In our view, this initiative is a practical and bipartisan approach to supporting agriculture and environmental stewardship simultaneously. It recognizes the voluntary efforts of farmers while reinforcing the state's commitment to protecting our soil and water. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify in support of the bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Lurie, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Rest and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Lurie, Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And on behalf of MFU, I'm glad to share our support for Senator Drazkowski's bill to pilot a $5 per acre credit for acres enrolled in the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And I'll just briefly highlight 3 points on why we think this is important. You know, first, in our view, Ag Water Quality Cert is a nation-leading program that has a lot of buy-in from not just our members, but folks across agriculture. I think there's two kind of big reasons for their success. One, they have on-farm certifiers that go out to folks' farms and help them take a holistic view of their operations, problem solve, and make sure that they're making the changes that they need to make to qualify for the program and to protect water quality. So boots on the ground and that holistic view. Second, and as it's been said, this is targeted towards those 8 counties in the Southeast, and we believe that's warranted. Just to add one piece of research provided by the Department of Agriculture, but certified farms have been shown to reduce nitrate loss upwards of 45% through adoption of conservation practices. So this is really a proven tool. And third, and speaking maybe to the carrot and the stick, this is, of course, a voluntary program. We appreciate that. That builds buy-in. But there's also accountability with it, too. I've talked to farmers as recent as this morning who have pursued certification, looked into it, and said, hey, this is too extensive for us right now, right? Or certifiers have recommended changes. They've said, hey, we can implement some of these, but we're going to need help to implement others. It's going to take us a while. And the certification program also goes onto those farms and confirms, well, they're certified, that they're implementing those practices that are protecting water quality. So a $5 per acre credit won't necessarily pay for the implementation of practices, but we think this incentive will generate interest and increase adoption in those Southeast counties, and as a result, improve water quality in the region. We celebrated in fall of 2023 1 million acres certified in the Ag Water Quality Certification. That is extraordinary, and there's still a long way to go, and we think that this can help move us along in those counties in the Southeast. So thank you for the opportunity to share our support.
Thank you, Mr. Lurie. Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Drazkowski, I want to thank you for bringing this bill again. I think I was one of your authors before. Certainly would be glad to co-sponsor again. I just want to add something to this excellent testimony. Obviously, I represent this area as well. And farmers over the years have talked about this phenomenal program, the water quality certification, and yet have often said the very same thing. We would like to do these things, but it's costly, and we would at least like a little incentive or encouragement to be able to start doing some of these things. So this is voluntarily saying we want this, we want high quality water, in our region, and we're willing to do those things to make it happen. And I think it's important that the state recognize that and provide this very small credit to say, yes, we agree. And, you know, we all believe that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's kind of what we're talking about here when it comes to water quality. So Senator Drazkowski, put me on your bill if you have extra room. And I, Madam Chair, it is critically important, and it's a very smart approach.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Any other comments? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this might be a good idea. Seems to make sense to have the carrot and stick approach, so I appreciate that. But Madam Chair, I'm glad to know that it's going to the Environment Committee because, you know, it's now coming from the Clean Water Fund. We have a Clean Water Council. I mean, it makes sense. This is about clean water. It should come from the Clean Water Fund. I think we try to listen to the advice of both the Clean Water Council, you know, which advises on those legacy dollars, and also, of course, the committee who's responsible for budgeting. And I have no idea if those dollars are yet spoken for or not, or this kind of programmatic support tax credit type arrangement is even something that should be and would be supported out of the Clean Water Fund. So my request, Madam Chair, is that perhaps when the motion is made, it can be made without recommendation for referral to Environment.
Senator Drazkowski, did you understand the request?
I did. I'd leave that up to the chair. At your pleasure, Madam Chair. I want to move this along, and I would like to. Sure. I think we need to have the discussion. And I know we had the discussion, I led it about Senator Hochschild's bill, and these types of bills are purely exactly what the 3A's amendment was about and is about, and it seems to be the right home for it. So I'm hopeful that we can have that discussion environment.
Senator Drazkowski, I would recommend that your motion be to refer it without recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I would like to make that motion that it be referred without recommendation to the Environment Committee.
Is there further discussion or comment?
Madam Chair, I had two things.
And I was going to come back to you, Senator Drazkowski.
Okay. Just quickly, I would be remiss if I didn't add to my earlier comments. Farmers today are the best stewards of the environment that they have ever been. Our farmers are doing an awesome job, not only in Southeast, but throughout the state and taking care of the environment. The added scrutiny around the environment and the challenges that places requires these burdens on them. But they're doing an awesome job. By the way, the two farms I mentioned that were rated by the EPA, I am aware of nothing that came back from the EPA saying that they found anything wrong that those two farms we're doing in terms of the environment, nothing that I have heard of, and that was 2 years ago. So really an unfair thing to happen on those farms, and it shocked the ag community in Southeast Minnesota. Also, I'll point out, Madam Chair and members, that if we are able to get this funded through the Clean Water Fund, that this bill would be maybe the first bill that I've seen this year that's gonna provide a bill that goes through this committee that actually is an improvement in the general fund as it comes through. It looks like it'll be a $40,000 improvement in the end. So that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Drazkowski. Any further comment or questions? Then Senator Drazkowski. Okay, I know. Senator Drazkowski moves that Senate file 1269 as amended. Be referred to the Committee on Environment, Climate, Legacy, et cetera, without recommendation. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The bill will be referred to that aforementioned committee. Thank you very much, Senator Putnam, Mr. Lurie,
Mr.
Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And next we have Senate File 1419, Senator Putnam. And as we begin, I'm informed that this bill needs to be referred to the Committee on Agriculture. Senator Putnam has the A2 amendment for Senate File 1419. We will adopt it, and then it's an author's amendment, and then since it is, well, it's a lot of pages, but I hope you will explain it after we adopt it then. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Putnam, Senate File 1419 as amended.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill and giving us another opportunity to talk about agriculture. You know, as Chair of the Ag Committee, I've been to over 90 farms in the last 2 years. And talked to farmers and heard of their struggles and learned a lot about the state of Minnesota agriculture. And one of the things that is true in every single farm in the state of Minnesota is that it's a deeply capital-intensive activity. Land, equipment, livestock, all incredibly expensive, and all this makes it even harder for young people who want to get a start in farming. So today, as I present the bill, I'd like to first talk about the beginning farmer tax credit itself, and then I'll go through the specific provisions of the bill, if that's acceptable to you, Madam Chair. So in 2017, Minnesota was among the first in the nation to pass a tax credit to help beginning farmers broker relationships with experienced landowners and other farmers. The credit provides existing farmers an incentive to rent or sell ag assets to beginning farmers, helping them buy land, build relationships, and get established in their operations. It also provides a tax credit for beginning farmers to enroll in farm business management, which, members, if you're not familiar with that program, it's an incredibly cool, wonderful thing. We expanded and improved this program in 2023. This included increasing the credit for sales of ag land from $30,000 to $50,000, and that was designed to help us incentivize more farmland transition and keep pace with rising land values. We also allowed family members to participate in the for sale of ag land to assist in generational farm transitions. And we provided an added leg up to farmers who aren't as likely to be coming into a generational farm. And finally, in the Ag Committee, we also invested in ensuring the Minnesota Department of Agriculture had the staff capacity to administer the credit, process applications in a timely manner, and do outreach to ensure that folks know how to access the credit. However, as part of balancing the final tax deal in 2023, we also lowered the overall amount of money available to the credit, taking it from $6 million annually, with the remainder carrying forward, to $4 million annually. Now, for the first time in the credit's history, this resulted in a significant number of farmers being turned away from the program. According to our friends at MDA, close to 40% of the people who applied for this credit were not given that credit because we just didn't have enough resource in the space. And members, I do want to underscore just briefly before I talk to the bill that this is an established, accomplished, mature program at this point. Part of the reason for having a limit on the credit in the past was because it was a new program. We know this program. We know that it works, and we know the number of people it will help. And right now, at the limit that we have, it's not helping everyone it could. So to the bill itself, Madam Chair, the amendment did two things. I'll tell you after you've already voted on it. On lines 2.1 to 2.2, we changed the definition of grant programs in the agriculture jurisdiction from emerging farmer to limited land excess farmer. And then on lines 3.6 to 3.1, we changed the effectiveness date for some of those things. Now, when you look through the bill itself, most of the changes, there are two different kinds of changes, lines 1.9, 1.1, 1.2. Most of the changes in the bill refer to eliminating the language that talks about a limitation on the credit, because the purpose of the bill is to remove that limitation. Then on lines 3.18 to lines 3.31, we take out the language about granting priority to some people over other folks, because if the credit cannot be exhausted, that priority is then moot. So those are the changes in the bill itself. Now, before I turn to the testifiers, Madam Chair, I'd like to highlight the 20 ag organizations who signed on to a letter in your packet in support of these changes. On this list, you'll see everybody. This is the entire ag world, by and large, has signed on to support this bill. You'll see the Farmers Union, the Farmers Bureau, and a bunch of different organizations that represent a broad cross-section of agriculture. And their uniform support reflects the value of the credit, and I hope that this bill can earn our support.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. So the your amendment is not a delete everything amendment. It is actually adding, it's a page in line that adds information or changes. I am curious about the adding a section four. Is that still kind of a technical that report to the legislature that is already being made with the term emerging, a term limited emerging farmers, that's the only real change that's being made there. The
yes,
report is already being made. We're just making it consistent with the other language in your bill. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for Senator Putnam before we ask for his testifiers? Seeing none, these two testifiers are giving their statements via Zoom, and I will call on Mr. Brad Kluver from Northfield. Mr. Kluver, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Chair Rest.
If you would identify yourself for the record, we're pleased to have your testimony.
Yes. For the record, my name is Brad Kluver, and I'm here to testify in support of Senator Putnam's bill to lift the total state cap on funding for the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit to ensure that no farmer is turned away from the program. I farm alongside my family near Northfield, and this tax credit program has been significantly beneficial as I've worked to establish my own operation. I grew up immersed in agriculture, and after spending years in education as a kindergarten teacher, I found myself drawn back to my roots at the family farm. My dream is that my own kids will share the same passion for agriculture and farming that I do, and that the farm is financially sustainable to present the best opportunities for them if they do choose that path. But no matter the support network around you, getting into agriculture and farming is not an easy venture. It's hard work, but the capital required to get into it and be successful presents one of the biggest hurdles. The Beginning Farmer Tax Credit was a critical piece in my own start on the family farm. I've been able to use it, use the program to purchase feeder pigs, which I then raised to market. I buy around 1,200 feeder pigs every 16 weeks from another family farm that farrows pigs just outside of Nearstrand. And the tax credit has been a key piece in those negotiations on price and my ability to source the animals from them. It's provided a tool to ensure I was competitive on securing ongoing purchases while also helping facilitate some mobility on prices when we had times of suppressed markets. Ultimately, the tax credit program helped facilitate and build that relationship that I now have with that other family farm that I purchased these pigs from. And it's helped us both find solutions that's beneficial to both parties and both of our respective farming operations. It's helped create sound framework for that partnership moving forward. But unfortunately, this past year, I was one of the farmers who was turned away from the program due to a lack of funding. And in talking with Farmers Union and others, I found my situation wasn't unique. There were nearly 40% of farms that applied that got turned away as well. And this marks the first time this happened in the program's history. This was challenging as these negotiations and conversations take place all throughout the year and took place under the assumption that the tax credit would be there upon application. When it wasn't, it required some significant changes on tax planning for the other family operation, and it created some hesitation on including that piece in future negotiations on the purchase of the feeder pigs. The lack of funding for the program effectively replaced the same barriers it had been so effective at helping mitigate for farmers like myself to become more financially sustainable. The tax credit is, of course, limited to beginning farmers, which only makes sense, but not being able to count on the credit creates uncertainty for owners and can make them less likely to work with young farmers like myself in the future. I can only imagine how challenging that would be for someone who'd negotiated a land purchase deal under the assumption that they could rely on the credit. Any young farmer on the land is a win both for our state and rural communities, and I very much appreciate your consideration of this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to share my support, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kluver. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Kluver? Then next, we will hear from Tess Parks from WT Farms in Northville, also on Zoom. Welcome to the committee. You'd identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Tessa Sadai Parks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Rural Wi-Fi, Blizzard, doesn't always mix. So thank you, Chair Rest and committee. Again, my name is Tessa Sadai Parks, and I'm here to share my strong support for Senator Putnam's bill to ensure that everyone can access our state's beginning farmer tax credit. I'm here as a beginning and first generation farmer, as well as the Rice County President of Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm glad to share our organization's strongest support and would reiterate what Senator Putnam had mentioned, which is 20 agriculture organizations who've signed a letter in support of this credit in your packets. This credit is important to me because as a beginning farmer, I hope to achieve the dream of farm ownership. And I know this credit will be an important tool. Together with my spouse, Wyatt, I own and operate WT Farms, raising grass-finished beef, which we sell direct to consumer at farmers markets. We also produce and sell certified organic hay. We benefited from the tax credit first when we received the educational credit for enrolling in farm business management. This allowed us to get that education and farm financial assistance cost-free, which was vital as we began this journey together. We benefited from the tax credit right now, two of our four leases are with qualifying landowners, and the credit has been a big part of those conversations when negotiating our rent. As beginning farmers, we don't have a ton of capital to be competitive on the price, so the tax credit helps bolster that relationship. This is essential when, as beginning farmers, things tend to go sideways. Even more so, the tax credit has been central to our conversations with one of our landowners who wants to transition his land to the next generation of farmers. We're really lucky that he's committed to working with us and sees value in helping beginning farmers. Still, even with that sincere interest, his main concern about selling us land is limiting his tax liability. So we anticipate this tax credit will be a big part of closing a final deal. And that'd be really pivotal for us. Owning farmland would allow us to invest in on-farm infrastructure like shelter, fencing, water, and the health of the soil. Even beyond that, it would help us be a bigger part of our community. Right now, we're commuting 30 minutes one way to care for our cattle as we live in Nursestrand. We'd love to live and work on our farm, increasing our capacity to raise more animals to fuel our food shed. And of course, all these things are good for our community too. When we buy land, we'll need to build some infrastructure, which means trips to the local hardware store, probably multiple, hiring contractors and more. In general, beginning farmers on the land is a win for our state. We need more of them, and this credit is an important tool the state has for making that happen. But if we don't know if we can rely on the credit because the state ran out of money, that's going to put us at a disadvantage in our conversations with landowners. When we're putting together a land deal, we need a credit we can count on being there. Thank you, Senator Putnam, for ensuring that no one is turned away from this credit and that we're helping new farmers like me get on the land and stay on the land. I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments for Ms. Parks? Seeing none, are there any further questions or comments for Senator Putnam? Seeing none, Senator Putnam, would you like to make the motion?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. I move that the Senate File 1419, as amended, be passed and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Broadband, Veterans, and Rural Development.
What amendment? Senator Putnam moves that Senate File 1419, as amended by the A2, be referred to the committee, passed and referred to the Committee on Agriculture. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the bill will be referred to the Committee on Agriculture. The last bill on our agenda this morning is also from Senator Putnam, Senate File 1498, and there is an A1 amendment. Members have it in their packets. There's a date change. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Putnam, Senate File 1498 is before us.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And this is something that we talked about last year, that we passed through and took care of last year into our final omnibus bill, so I'm hoping we can do that again. Thank you, Chair Rest. I'm glad to present Senate File 1498, which would allow small farmers to qualify for the agricultural homestead tax credit. This bill is familiar because, like I just mentioned, we passed it last session and moved it forward. And I was proud that our committee led in expanding the Ag Homestead Tax Credit, increasing the first valuation tier to keep pace with land values that are becoming unsustainable for family farmers. I want to specifically thank Senator Weber for his leadership on this issue, because I know he's made done a lot of work in this area, especially around property taxes for farmers. So the proposal today builds on this work by ensuring that very small farmers, those cultivating and earning an income on less than 11 contiguous acres, can benefit from the Keystone Tax Credit. This is important because these are small farmers, often beginning farmers, who need this tax break. And they're also typically, quite frequently, farming closer to urban and suburban areas where land values are higher and they're competing with residential development. So much like for the mid-sized and larger farmers who benefit from the Ag Homestead, this will limit their tax burden, but most important, help them hold on to that land and to help them continue to be able to pursue new options in feeding our communities and growing their own businesses. Now, just because these are small farms, it doesn't mean that they're not actually earning income. I think that this initial provision that we're trying to change probably assumed that we're just talking about gardeners. We're not talking about gardeners. We're talking about farmers who are in the business of agriculture. So in a little bit, we're going to hear from my pal Kelsey, whose farm I visited this last summer. It's an amazing farm, and she's a really cool farmer, so I'm glad that she gets to hang out with us again because she testified here last year. But I actually got to see her farm this past summer. And it's a beautiful space where she's doing some incredibly cool things, feeding people, experimenting with new crops and new ways of growing those crops, direct-to-consumer options and going to food shelves and schools. She's doing incredibly cool work. And yet, according to the law, she doesn't get this tax credit because she's supposedly more of a gardener than a farmer. You also see in your packets a letter from farmers in Senator Housechild's district who earns the majority of their income from less than 10 acres, growing vegetables intensively in hoop houses. This story is not rare. As land prices continue to go up, many young farmers have to find new ways of doing more with less land. So to the bill itself, lines 4.11 to 4.27. are where the primary changes are made. And in that space, it basically comes up with a new sort of definition for who should be eligible for this credit. And that is, it includes farms that are fewer than 11 contiguous acres, but puts on new provisions that require them to demonstrate that they are still actively farming in a commercial enterprise. So you have to fill the Schedule F, to declare the amount of income that you've made on your farm, or you have to have a certification that you will be filing a Schedule F later on. So those are the big changes that are actually in the bill that are in that space. Madam Chair, I do just want to just briefly say that this is an economic concern, but it's also one of basic respect. People who are farming less than 10 acres are farmers, period. They need to be defined as such and respected as such in the law. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Are you ready? I'm sorry. Are you ready?
I'm sorry. We have a couple testifiers. No, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yes. We have one witness, Mr. Or Ms. I'm sorry, I don't know. Zavedra Hermlumista from North Ranch. If you identify yourself for the record, we're pleased to have your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can everybody hear me?
If you'd speak just a bit louder, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name's Kelsey Zavedra. I'm a president of the Chisago County Farmers Union, and I'm glad to share strong support for Senator Putnam's bill to allow farmers to small farmers to participate in the Ag Homestead Tax Credit. I'm a specialty crop farmer, so I grow fruit, herbs, and vegetables. Most of what I grow is sold direct to consumer. I sell through my farm store. I also sell at the Mill City Farmers Market and through our newly formed cooperative. I'm a full-time farmer. My farm is just 5 acres. I don't have 5 acres because that was my goal. It's land is expensive and it's all I could get. I wanted to buy a much larger farm, but accessing land is a significant barrier to many young and beginning farmers. It's something we're all facing. We're currently losing 2,000 acres of farmland a day to development, and young people are actively leaving agriculture because we simply cannot compete with this. Fortunately, it's possible to have an intensive operation on very small parcels of land like mine. Many young and beginning farmers are now doing this as it's a way to still make a living on the land while farming. And this being said, we're not recognized as farmers when it comes to agricultural homestead tax, strictly due to the size of our farms. I was told that if I wanted to get an agricultural tax status, the only way I'd be able to do this is to obtain an additional 6 acres within a 4-township radius. Missing out on this tax credit is important to me because I'm operating on a slim profit margin and property taxes are significant. I really appreciate Senator Putnam's work on this bill and the time he took with members of the Senate Agriculture Committee visiting my farm last summer. Keeping farmland taxes affordable will keep me and others on the land. So today I'm speaking in support of this bill so that all farmers, no matter the size of our farms, we can enjoy the benefits we deserve. We work really hard to feed our communities and we really value your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments for the witness? Seeing none, Senator Putnam, or I'm sorry, Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is maybe for Senator Putnam or Mr. Sylvia. I have a farm in my district, and there's a bill coming forward, Madam Chair, that deals with kind of this area. And I guess really I'm hoping Mr. Sylvia kind of chimes in. I'm hoping maybe Mr. Sylvia also chimes in here. And this one, the particular farmer, the couple has 14 acres. They have a cut flower production business where they cultivate about 4 acres of land and they sell about $200,000 wholesale of cut flowers a year. And we're trying to figure out how to get them into the ag classification. And so that's what that bill is going to be doing, Madam Chair. And so I'm curious how that, and maybe we just need to have additional discussion on this down the road, but I'm curious how that, Mr. Sylvia, fits into this bill or does not.
Mr. Sylvia?
Madam Chair, Senator Drazkowski, I think that scenario you're describing probably would not, under the language of this bill, qualify simply because the term floriculture has not yet been included within either this definition on line 4.24, or you know the sort of underlying definition of an agricultural product. So at the very least, that would need to change. And also, the constituent you're referencing, I'd be curious to know how they would, or if they meet the requirements on 4.18 or 4.20 in terms of the gross income. So I think that might be another area where maybe if that those numbers would need to be modified to accommodate that, you know, that specific farm to be considered eligible under this language.
Thank you.
Senator Drazkowski, is this a bill that you have introduced?
I believe it's going to be introduced soon. Mr. Sylvia is nodding his head, yes.
I wonder, this bill, 1498, is going to the Ag Committee. Or not this one. I'm sorry. This one is staying here, correct?
I think so, Madam Chair. I don't need to go need anyplace. To see. I'll ask the Ag Chair, but I don't think he needs it.
If that if that subject was going to be dealt with in the Ag Committee, that might be also a nice place to do it. But it's here. But maybe if you could have a discussion with Senator Putnam, your bill, in a sense, could be added to his if he is willing when the bill comes back before us. So
we'll have that discussion with Senator Putnam.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
I think we'll bring Mr. Silvey in the workshop with us, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I hope that you will have that discussion soon. Is there further discussion of Senate File 1498? Seeing none, Senate File 1498 will be laid over for consideration for the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Putnam. This afternoon, in terms of announcements, at 3 o'clock, we are having the discussion on, what's the bill number?
Senate File 375.
What?
Senate File 375.
On Senate File 375, that is the proposed changes to the, as introduced, the local sales tax reforms. Just a minute. It's at 2:30. I'm sorry, it's at 2:30. And in room 303, if those who are interested are unable to be there in person, we're trying to see if we can have DFL caucus staff, that's our caucus room, set it up that you can participate remotely. We're trying to be extra sensitive today to the to weather changes. Supposedly the weather is going to be better by then, but who knows? We all made it here today and appreciate your attendance. And I think that's it. We're not meeting tomorrow. We'll be publishing the agenda for next Tuesday.
It's sometime end of day today or early tomorrow.
I know, but for next Tuesday?
Yeah.
For next Tuesday, either the end of the day or tomorrow. Any other announcements or questions from the committee? Seeing none, the committee is adjourned.